The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
G'day everybody and welcome to City Bible Forum. My name's Craig Josling. I don't know if you've ever been hauled before some sort of authority and have had to give account. Maybe it was at school, being hauled up before the principal. Maybe the boss has asked you to come into the office for an awkward conversation. Maybe it was something that you did do. Maybe it was something that you were innocent of. Well, today we see Jesus being hauled before the big authority in Jerusalem, Pilate. And I'm now going to read the part of the Bible that Ian Powell will be explaining for us in a minute. So if you'd like to open up your programs, it's from the Gospel of John chapter 18, and I'll be reading various excerpts from that. We'll see how this plays out as Jesus is dragged before Pilate. John 18, 28 to 40. Then the Jewish leaders took Jesus from Caiaphas to the palace of the Roman governor. By now it was early morning, and to avoid ceremonial uncleanness, they did not enter the palace because they wanted to be able to eat the Passover. So Pilate came out to them and asked, "What charges are you bringing against this man?" "If he were not a criminal," they replied, "we would not have handed him over to you." Pilate said, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." "But we have no right to execute anyone," they objected. This took place to fulfill what Jesus had said about the kind of death he was going to die. Pilate then went back inside the palace, summoned Jesus and asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "Is that your own idea?" Jesus asked. "Or did others talk to you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate replied. "Your own people and chief priests handed you over to me. What is it that you've done?" Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jewish leaders. But now my kingdom is from another place." "Ah, you are a king then," said Pilate. Jesus answered, "You say that I am a king. In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "What is truth?" retorted Pilate. And with this he went out again to the Jews, gathered there and said, "I find no basis for a charge against him, but it is your custom for me to release to you one prisoner at the time of the Passover. Do you want me to release the king of the Jews?" They shouted back, "No, not him. Give us Barabbas." Now Barabbas had taken part in an uprising. Down at John 19 verse 1. Then Pilate took Jesus and had him flogged. From then on, Pilate tried to set Jesus free. But the Jews kept shouting, "If you let this man go, you're no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar." When Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and sat him down on the judge's seat at a place known as the stone pavement, which in Aramaic is Gabbatha. Finally, Pilate handed him over to them to be crucified.
I put the pressure on Craig. I said, "Yeah, read it, but you've got to read it well." So we discover that Craig is the sort of man who rises in tension rather than collapses. Well, in my notes are these three letters, WIT, which stands for What is Truth? And I suppose part of the question we're going to look at today is whether or not you're interested in the question of truth as a witty part of conversation. Sorry about that. But as I see it down in front of me, WIT, what is truth? That is actually a very profound and a very important question. It's not asked here by a philosopher, not even by a philosopher king, but by a bureaucrat, by a governor, by a politician, by an ex-soldier. And it's which indicates that even those sorts of people are fundamentally human. At some point or other in your life, you will have in the past, or you will be now, or you will in the future, really want to know what the truth is. What's really going on? I'd like you to ponder for a second how serious you think you are on really knowing the things that are true. What would you pay if I could give you a CD-ROM that had the truth on it? Absolutely guaranteed that it was the truth. Or perhaps, what would I have to pay you to get you to show no interest in the truth in the future? Socrates, that famous Greek philosopher, about whom our historical records are very dodgy, but the great stories that come down from him. And the story is told in a number of different forms of a time when a very aristocratic young man came up to Socrates and said, "Great Socrates, I want the truth." Well, Socrates took him immediately into some water. The stories differ whether it was the ocean or whether it was a Greek, one of the great famous Greek baths. Anyhow, he brings the young man to walk down beside him and he says, "What is it that you want?" He says, "I want the truth." Well, Socrates then leaps upon him and holds him under the water for quite a long period of time. Lets the young man come up and says, "What is it that you want?" He said, "I want the truth." Socrates again grabs him and holds him under the water. Pulls him up. "What is it that you want?" "I want the truth." He then holds him under for even longer, and this time waits until he's going the wrong sort of colour for a human face, and then pulls him up and he says, "What is it that you want?" He said, "I want air. I need air." And Socrates said, "Go and come back to me when your passion for truth is the same as it was for air." I think Socrates was onto something, which is that you can ask questions about the truth because it's a mind-stretching and fascinating conversation. Much more interesting, say, for example, than politics or even rugby, which I love talking about for a good 10 minutes. But then after a while, I think, come on, surely we can talk about something more interesting than this. We can play with questions of truth. Are we really as desperate to know the things that are true as the young man was for air? Now, Pilate asked the question, "What is truth?" He's very capable of asking the right question. One of the interesting things for us to look at together is whether or not the man who asked the famous question is competent, courageous enough, or even able to cope with the answer. And we look at him so that we can also reflect on ourselves. And I thought what might be helpful as we do this together in a few minutes is to look at three different ways of talking about truth. They're three overlapping circles. They're not completely different, but they may help us to get a sort of a full picture on what truth is, what that word means. And the first way we're going to look at it is a Latin-flavoured truth, or a Latin concern about truth, a Roman concern. Pilate was a Roman. Well, he was originally from Spain, but he was part of the Roman culture. Grew up outside Seville in Spain. Joined the Roman army, had a magnificent, rapid career going up, 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 up. Very brave, sort of VC material, very courageous soldier. Then moves across to the diplomatic corps. Takes a man called Sejanus, became his patron, which is the way that Roman government worked. You couldn't see the emperor yourself, but you had to have someone who was near the emperor who would argue your case. And Lucius Sejanus was Pilate's patron. He was in charge of the Praetorian Guard, a very important position in protecting the emperor. Well, what happened was that he married well. He married an ex-emperor's granddaughter. And he finally gets the post as prefect or governor of Palestine, which is kind of a bit like, you find that you're in the Wallabies, say 10 years ago, but then you discover you're marking Jonah Lomu. So you're not sure, is this a win or a loss? Because those of you who are not familiar with Jonah Lomu, he had what was called the Maori sidestep, where he would just run over the top of people. And there's magnificent footage on YouTube of Jonah Lomu just running over the top of all sorts of otherwise heroic players. So when you get to mark him, it's a bit like becoming the governor of Palestine. It was probably the hardest job, the least wanted job. It ruined careers because the Jews were the only monotheists in the world, the only people who believed in one God, believe you shouldn't make idols. And the Romans were forever having to kill them by the truckload as they rose up against various bits of idolatry that the Romans assumed was okay. Pilate was the judge. And he asked the question of Jesus. Jesus had gone through a joke of a religious trial where the issue was, are you the Son of God? He was found guilty before he went in. They'd already decided to kill him. Now he's taken because the Jews are not allowed to kill. They did kill some people in what was sort of lynchings. The first Christian martyr was just lynched and was stoned to death. But they couldn't do it legally. They had to go to the Romans. Tyrants and dictators are the only ones allowed to kill people when they're in charge. So they go to see Pilate, and you heard the reading of this strange trial. And one of the questions for us asked is this factually accurate? The question that Pilate's trying to get a factual answer to is the question, are you the king of the Jews? In verse 33. Now, interesting enough, this is one of the few places where all four Gospels have exactly the same words. This was clearly the issue Pilate was trying to work out. Is this man the king of the Jews? Now, the problem with that, if you claim to be king of the Jews, you're having a bit of a stoush with Caesar, who tend to think he was the king of everywhere. So that was the question. And Pilate, at one level, is doing a decent job at trying to make it a fair trial. Is this man really the king? Is he really claiming to be an enemy of Rome at this point and an opponent of Caesar? And one of our questions to work out is this factually true? It's an obvious question for us. The Latin word for truth was veritas. So I used to go to Sydney Boys High, and we had this, our motto, it's about the only thing I learned at Sydney High, I think, was veritate et virtute, which is a form, it stands truth and honour. And all Sydney High boys are full of truth and honour, of course. And it comes from this veritas. Now, veritas was a fairly undervalued Roman goddess, was often pictured as found hiding in a well because she was so hard to find. And she is the god of truth. And she gives birth to virtue. And but it's truth in the sense of factually what happened, a record of events. So that's why you can see a statue of Veritas outside the Canadian Supreme Court. What really happened is the question. Pilate's asking, what is really going on with this man? That's the issue he's concerned about. Our concern is the record true? Is this really the sort of thing that happened? And one of the interesting things that has come clear in the last 100 years or so is we've got more and more information about Pilate from outside the New Testament, and we've got quite a lot now, is that he fits exactly, this is exactly true to type. The two things we know about Pilate, it'd be fun if we had more time to look at this, is he was a ruthless, bloody governor. From the first moment he came into Jerusalem as the new governor, he was involved in huge fights. There had been an official complaint made to Jerusalem, to Rome about him. And in the end, he was removed from governorship about 4 years after this incident with Jesus because of the bloody way in which he'd put down a rising in Samaria. He was a ruthless man, a courageous man. He hated the Jews. From the first time he got there, he had a confrontation with them. He threatened them with death, which he thought would silence them. They simply went, all the Jewish men went like this. They just exposed their necks and said, come on, buddy, kill us. And what the Romans are really concerned about is taxation. So they don't mind killing people, but they don't like killing people because then they can't pay tax. So in the end, he backed off. So there's this hatred, and you can see it in the interchange. He doesn't like them, they don't like him. We see it also in Jesus. Actually, the other thing about him is to realize that he was vulnerable. He'd already had an official complaint, and here's the key thing, which we now know from history. About 18 months before this event, his patron, Sejanus, had been put to death, October the 18th, 31 AD, had been put to death at the order of Tiberius the emperor under the suspicion of treason. Now here's how it works. If you get your position because of someone who was in the end put to death by the emperor for treason, you're in a pretty dodgy position. A, you've got no one watching your back home, and B, you're under suspicion. So we see how this works out because the thing that in the end forces Pilate's hand is when they say to him in chapter 19, verse 12, when he's trying to release Jesus. He doesn't like Jesus, but he thinks he's not worthy of being put to death. Finally, they yell out in chapter 19, verse 12, if you let this man go, you are no friend of Caesar. Anyone who claims to be a king opposes Caesar. And then look at the next word. It says, when Pilate heard this, he brought Jesus out and he's dead. Just signs the death warrant. Right? There's something in those words, according to John, that forces Pilate's hand. And it's almost certainly the words, no friend of Caesar. Because about 30 years afterwards, we have records of people being put to death under this official charge in Rome, that you are not a friend of Caesar. Now, we don't know from other records whether or not it was a charge earlier than that. Historians think it probably was. This may be the first record of someone using this phrase. But when the man says, you are no friend of Caesar, that's what galvanizes Pilate. And then, sadly, reluctantly, Jesus has to die. Because at that point, Pilate knows if word gets back to Rome that there's a man who is, that I'm not a friend of Caesar, I'm dead. My patron is already dead. So we've got a man who is both ruthless and pragmatic, but very vulnerable, which is why he caves in at the moment. He looks as if he's the most powerful man in Palestine, but in the end he gets bullied by the crowd and the religious leaders. It's absolutely factual and true to life that we know about Pilate. And the Jesus you meet here is similarly. He's doing what Jesus does in all the other Gospels. So when he gets asked a question, what's the classic Jesus response to a question? A question back. Right? So that's how he starts off. Pilate asks him a question. Are you the king of the Jews? He says. Did you think of that yourself, or did someone else tell you? Yeah, feel like Pilate said, I'm asking the questions here, buddy. I'm the judge. You're in, just answer the flipping question. No. Classic Jesus answers a question with a question. Pilate pushes him. So Jesus gives him an answer, but it's an odd answer, which again, if you read the Gospels, is typical of Jesus. He's pushing on the question of, are you the king? And Jesus kind of says, yeah, but really I'm on about truth. Because he's trying to help Pilate, who should be on about truth. And then finally we see another classic response of Jesus in chapter 19. He refuses to talk. People badger him. See, when he goes before his own people, the Jewish priests, he refuses to answer until they put him under oath, and then he answers briefly. When he's taken before Herod, Herod doesn't get a word out of him. This is classic Jesus. When he comes to the conclusion that you're not interested in the truth, that you're just a bigot playing with words, he won't play the game. He's just silent. And in the end, Pilate finishes up with a silent treatment. Once Pilate shows that he's capable of saying at the end of chapter 18, I find no basis for a charge against him, but let's give him a whipping anyhow, which is a very strange sort of logic, Jesus will no longer talk to him. He's shown that he's not a man of justice or truth. These are classic, you know, portrayals of Pilate as we know him in history and Jesus as we know him in history. So Pilate raises the question of truth, and in terms of the Latin sense, veritas, factuality. That's his concern, and we can show the concern that this is an entirely factual interchange. Let's have a look at it now from a Greek flavour. A Greek flavour, or a Greek concern about truth. Aletheia would be the word in Greek. It's pretty meaningless in English, but that's the word that plays behind here. What is truth? Now let me share with you what the summary of the Greek take on truth. It wasn't so much a factual record of what happened. Let me read you what Aristotle says in his work, Metaphysics. He says this. It's a philosopher, so I'll read it twice. To say of what is that it is, and of what is not that it is not, that is truth. It makes more sense the second time. I'll read it again. To say of what is that it is, and of what is not, that it is not, that is true. That is truth. So if you ask what is truth in the Greek context, you're saying, if you have a set of words, do they correspond clearly to a given reality? The sort of reality that you bump into even if you don't believe in it. It's the sort of reality that you see in the most dangerous guns in Australia. I think this is true, I'm not sure of the statistics, but it's often said the most dangerous guns in Australia are unloaded guns. So a friend of mine, Donald, was accidentally killed by his best friend when his best friend brought out to him this new gun he had that was unloaded, foolishly pointed it at Donald and killed him. Didn't mean to. It was a terrible tragedy. The truth of the matter was that no matter what the young man thought and believed, and he really did believe, that it wasn't loaded, the truth of the matter was there was a bullet in there. And that's the sort of truth that we're talking about here. What is it that corresponds to it? This is sometimes called the correspondence view of truth. It's not what do you feel to be true, a subjective view of truth, or what works, a pragmatic view of truth, which is useful in business, etc. But what's ultimately really there? It does not matter how many people think the world is flat. Well, as far as I understand, the truth of the matter is that the world is a sphere. That's the way it is. So when Pilate asks the question about the identity of Jesus, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus wants to talk about a more significant question of truth, which is the way that the universe is. So Pilate asks the question, in response to Jesus. This is what I think shows in the end that he's probably not all that genuine in his pursuit. Jesus says in verse 37, "You say that I'm a king." This is classic Jesus changing the subject. "In fact, the reason I was born and came into the world is to testify to the truth." Pilate wants to speak about kingship. Jesus wants to speak about truth, reality. "Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "What is truth?" retorts Pilate. And the next sentence will show you that he's not amongst those who love the truth. "With this he went out again to the Jews, gathered there and said, 'I find no basis for charging him.'" What does Jesus say is the mark of people who are on the side of truth? You can check yourself on this, whether or not you really are a person on the side of truth or not, or just playing witty games with what is truth. Jesus says, "Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." So according to Jesus, if you say that you're interested in truth, but we never take the time to listen to him, that is not to go and sit on a hill and listen to ourselves and confuse that with Jesus, but to open up the gospel records and read what he says about life, about God, about how we should treat people. We see this picture of truth in even the name of God, don't we? You know, when Moses is sent back to say to the most powerful man in the world to let his free labor force go, which is an easy job, and he tries to get out of it, but God insists that he goes and does it. And at one stage, Moses says to God, "Who will I say has sent me?" And the answer that God gives back is Yahweh. That is, "I am what I am. I will be what I will be." What God is saying is, "I am the independent one. I am who I am. I'm not changed by what people think about me. If all the universe gets together and votes that there is no God, he will just be I am-ing on and on, unchanged." Right? It's just the way things are. It's like a bullet in a gun. God is just there. He is who he is. And Jesus wants to speak about these great questions, these relevant questions about you and God and how God feels about you and what God expects of us and what will really happen to us when we inevitably and sooner than we think die. Jesus tells that story in Luke 16, doesn't he, of the very rich and successful and carefree man who every day is Christmas and he dies. He finds himself in hell, according to Jesus. Seeks for relief but finds that there is no relief. He's stuck there forever. He remembers he's got five brothers who are still alive. So he wants to get a message to them to tell them what is true so that they would repent. So Jesus will tell us what is true. Some of it we'll like, some of it we won't like. And the question is, are we a person on the side of truth? Are you willing to have your opinions changed by Jesus? Jesus says he comes to bear witness to the truth. Now, he says more than that. Earlier on in this gospel, he has said not just that he will speak the words of truth, but he said, "I am the truth." Well, we need to scurry along. So there's the Latin view, which is concerned about factuality. The Greek view, which is that sort of sense of what is essentially there. You bump into it, fall into it, whether you believe in it or not. And lastly, a particularly sort of Hebrew or Jesus flavor or concern about truth. I think it's fair to say that according to Jesus, truth is more obvious, more dangerous, and more elusive than people think. It's obvious and easy to find. Shut up and listen to Jesus. Jesus says, "You're on the side of truth? You'll listen to me." It's not all that hard. You don't have to be a genius. You don't even have to be able to read. Because there's any number of people who read the Bible. You go to church, you'll hear Jesus' teaching being read. People who want to know the truth, according to Jesus, listen to him. Stop talking about what you think and start listening to what he says. It's dangerous. See, the reason why in the end Pilate's not concerned about truth is because he's got a really pressing decision to make that could break him. Right? It's like Peter. Pilate three times says, "There's no basis for a charge, there's no basis for a charge, there's no basis for a charge." Peter, the friend of Jesus, says three times that night, "I don't know him, I don't know him, I don't know him." To align yourself with the truth will often, or sometimes, not just be inconvenient for you perhaps, you have to love rather than be selfish, be disciplined rather than lazy, but it can make you deeply unpopular with powerful people. So it's really obvious and easy to get, but it's often dangerous, and there's pressure groups like there was on Pilate. Although he seemed such a powerful man, there was a pressure group that broke him because they appealed to his highest God, which was his own peace and wealth and safety and prosperity. And it's elusive. Jesus says that the truth is sort of obvious and accessible, but it's elusive. And what makes it elusive and slippery is not because it's slippery, but because we're slippery. So Jesus will say in John chapter 7, verse 17, "If you are willing to do the will of my Father, you will know that my teaching is true." So if you work that the other way, if you are not the sort of person who says, "Whatever God wants me to do, that I will do," you will not be able to work out what the truth is. If you're willing to do the will of my Father, Jesus says, you'll know that my teaching is true. So the heart, that is the central control, the central orientation of your life, will actually control or inhibit your ability to know what is true. So Jesus says elsewhere in John chapter 3 that the light has come into the world, but people prefer the darkness to the light. We're kind of addicted to the truth and we long to know what is true, but we're also allergic to the truth and we seek to avoid it. Jesus says if it's the praise of man you want, right, you will not be able to know the truth. If you prefer the praise of man to the praise of God, Jesus says in John 12, you'll never be able to discern what is true. So it's actually the heart has to be right before the mind can get it right. The old saying, convince a man against his will and he remains unconvinced still. Right? The argument can be, you'll have seen this in others, we don't see it in ourselves, but you'll have seen it with others where the evidence is clear, but a person doesn't want to see it, so they don't see it. Many years ago, in my first year of becoming a Christian, I heard John Stott, this magnificent Christian man from England, and he said this. He suggested that when you're engaged in a dialogue with yourself, that is Christianity true, or with a friend, he said, ask yourself or ask them this question. That's this. It's a sort of a thought exercise. And I say this to friends sometimes. I said it to an atheist friend of mine about 2 weeks ago. I said, just imagine, I can't do this in 5 minutes, but imagine if in 5 minutes I could answer every single one of your questions about Christianity. Prove that there's a God, prove the New Testament's reliable, prove Jesus rose from the dead. I could answer every question so you were intellectually totally satisfied. Would you at that moment turn your life over to Jesus and obey him as your Lord and Master? Now, sometimes I say to my friends, don't answer that aloud. Because most of us would want to say, of course I would. But the simple fact of the matter is most of us would say, gee, I'm really not sure. Because often what we present to ourselves and others as a great intellectual issue has as a churning engine powering behind it a moral or a heart question. We don't really want God. Our real problem, Jesus would say, is actually sin. It's our rebelliousness to God. And we use our brain to protect ourselves from the moral challenge. I saw this soon after I heard John Stott say this. I was on the balcony overlooking Bondi Beach as a young Christian having an argument. The girl who organized the party was angry with me, I discovered afterwards, because about a quarter of the party in the end, we all squeezed onto this little balcony. Instead of dancing and having a good time, we were talking theology and history, and that wasn't the purpose of the party. But I had this started off with this guy, and I said, why aren't you a Christian? He said, it's rubbish, it's bull. So we argued the toss for about 2 hours on the balcony. And to his enormous credit, and this rarely, rarely happens, particularly with men, to his enormous credit, I still remember, I was shocked then, I was still shocked. He said, oh, I can see it is true. Christianity really is true. I got all excited. I said, fantastic, you're going to become a Christian. And he laughed. He said, of course not. He said, I'm not going to let God tell me how to run my sex life and how much alcohol I can drink and stuff like that. Now, what he was showing with remarkable honesty was the question that John Stott said and the question that Jesus says. If you're on the side of truth, right, he's actually presuming that most of us or many of us are not on the side of truth. I don't think we're on the side of lies. We're on the side of ease and popularity and doing what we know how to do. There is this basic question that Pilate needs to get right. Pilate can ask the question, what is truth? But Pilate is too selfish, too cowardly, in spite of his physical bravery, to cope with the answer. In the movie, the Zaffirelli movie about Jesus, which is kind of great in every area except the guy who they get to play Jesus, who just looks a bit creepy. But if you can ignore that, the rest of the movie is brilliant. Pilate is played by Rod Steiger. It's a terrific portrayal of Pilate. You can see it on YouTube if you want. You can watch it in 41 episodes. But Pilate asks the question, you know, what is truth? He asks it in a sort of playful way in the movie. And very cleverly, what the movie maker does is, when Pilate says, what is truth? The movie maker then focuses in on the face of Jesus. Because that's the truth. Right? It's staring in front of him as he plays the little game. The answer to the question is Jesus. Because Jesus says, I am the truth. Well, I shall stop there, and you have a chance to write questions or screen them from the floor.
Yes, in a minute or two, Ian will answer in an expert way any question that you have. And we do that in two ways. The first way is for you to write down any questions or comments about Ian's talk on the slip of paper which is inside your program. So if you have a question or a comment, you could start to write down now, and Jamie will be wandering around, or Jeffrey, and we'll pick those up and hand them on to Ian. The second way is, if you're brave enough, in a minute you can just stick your hand, or you can call out a comment or a question.
Jeff, have you gone on a strike because no one's asked any, no one's written any questions? Okay. Are there any people who'd like to ask questions by yelling them out from the floor? I could ask a question. All right. Well, look, just before I give you a summary of where we're going to next week, you might remember, I'm not a great Tom Cruise fan, even before he started jumping on Oprah's sofas and going mad. But I do love the scene, and many of you will know this great scene at the end of A Few Good Men with the great colonel he's arguing with, and he says, and they're getting very passionate, as they do at the end of movies, and he says, it's a trial scene, and Tom Cruise's character says, I want answers. And the old colonel comes back, you want answers? Cruise says, I want the truth. And this great line comes back, you can't handle the truth. I had a boy say that to me in high school once. I got the boys in my year 10 class who hadn't done their homework. I said, come on, fellas, just stand up. The four or five guys hadn't done their homework in Christian studies. And I said, look, I want us to try something novel. I want you to tell me why you didn't do it. But honestly, you're not going to get it. I'm just curious to know. Did you forget? Did you just think, it didn't matter? And so I turned to the first guy and I said, come on, now just tell us the truth. He says, you want the truth? You can't handle the truth. And which I thought was a great comeback, but I could handle that particular sort of truth. And I felt like giving him an early mark from maths as a reward. But I think there is that trouble with Jesus. That one of the sad things about that movie about the environment, Inconvenient Truth, is not the content, but it stole a great Christian phrase. Because the truth of Jesus is often inconvenient. Because we've got our life structures going and we've learned to live with our picture of reality, and you run into Jesus like Pilate did. It was just an ordinary day for Pilate, and he suddenly runs into truth incarnate and deals with him in about 20 minutes. And the truth is often inconvenient, but Jesus says, it is only the truth that will set you free. Learning, as I have from American movies, it is apparently true that in the middle of the opening foyer of the CIA, are these words, the truth shall set you free. That is, as you might know, not just a thing that people work out. That's a direct quote from Jesus in John 8. And much as I love America, I really like them to take those words out of the headquarters of the CIA, I think. But the truth of Jesus is inconvenient. It is wonderful. But it is the only thing that sets us free, according to Jesus.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.